Well, to explore this further, I have in our Melbourne studio Professor John McNeil, who's head of the Department of Epidemiology and Preventive Medicine at Monash University. John McNeil has been developing registries, and we'll explain what those are further in a moment, to help deal with this part of the problem. On Skype from Brisbane, I have Dr. Jim Cameron, who chairs the Australasian Cardiac Outcomes Registry, and in our Sydney studio, Dr. Robert Herkes, who is Chief Medical Officer of the Australian Commission on Safety and Quality in Healthcare, whose mission is to raise the safety and levels of safety and quality in the Australian healthcare system by constantly improving standards. It's a government agency. Rob, not a good day for safety in Australian healthcare.
Well, Norman, I think it's pointed out lots of issues around our healthcare, both good and bad. And there are some really important lessons, I think, for everyone to understand. Devices are put in people after a consultation with their doctors, and the patient and their family really need to have a careful conversation with their doctor about what the risks and benefits of the particular proposed device are for them. And there are some important improvements happening within Australia around devices, where just like there are medicines inserts in the packets of pharmaceuticals we get, the TGA is developing device information brochures and leaflets for patients and their families so that they can be educated about what the device is and have a more nuanced conversation with their health professional.
But there's an enormous range of devices, isn't there? I mean, we should just give a sense of what we're talking about here.
Well, it runs from everything from devices that might be for life support, like a ventilator or a dialysis machine, right through to tiny little screws that you might need if you need a spinal fusion, through to stents. The range is endless. Pacemakers, defibrillators, all sorts of things.
A brochure is not going to cut it, is it, Rob?
Well, it's better than no information at all. And at the moment, I think there's a complete disequity or imbalance in the amount of information patients and their families know about the devices and what the benefits and risks of those devices are.
But the issues keep on coming, Rob Herkes. I mean, you've got the story of vaginal mesh, which just kept on going for years. My understanding is that doctors sitting on government committees deciding about vaginal mesh were conflicted. They were actually taking money from the manufacturers, which was the same story with breast implants that were rupturing. And now we have lymphoma as a link to breast implants. We've had faulty implantable defibrillators. There's conflict of interest and failure all over the place.
I agree there's conflict of interest, and clearly the medical profession needs to be squeaky clean about declaring their conflicts. Yes, there have been some multiple concerns about some of those devices, but when you look at the range of benefits other devices have given people, it's really is a balance, and we need to keep that balance in mind.
Tell me the story of this ventilator that you came across recently.
So the Commission is often asked to go and look at safety issues for the states and territories. One of the states asked the Commission to have a look at some ventilators that the state had bought for regional and rural hospitals. The ventilators had the benefit that they could ventilate adults and children and neonates, which at times was needed in regional centres.
So
they were ventilators that were really good for occasionally helping when there was a neonate or a paediatric patient that might need ventilation. The state was concerned that there were reports of failures of these ventilators, and so the Commission was asked to look, and we did a tour of the state. And
tell me, there was one story in an ICU in one city. So, tell me that story.
So at one hospital that I visited, I heard the story of a young patient, a child with pneumonia, whose family was sleeping in with the child overnight, was being nursed by an agency nurse. Unfortunately, intermittently, this ventilator is a bit like a smartphone. It has a touch screen. Intermittently, the touch screen on this ventilator would stop working, and there's nothing you could do to change the settings on the ventilator or even turn off an alarm if an alarm went off. This child's ventilation changed. The child got harder to ventilate. The ventilator alarmed, but the nurse couldn't alter any of the settings, and had to swap the patient off that ventilator, which luckily she was able to do, but she was an agency nurse, not used to working in that ICU. And on balance of risks, I decided that it was inappropriate for those ventilators to be used until the manufacturer had upgraded the software to stop that problem occurring.
So presumably you told the Therapeutic Goods Administration about it?
So I told the state. The state withdrew the ventilator from use in the state and the TGA was informed.
Now what's happened since?
So since then the TGA has done extensive testing of this ventilator, put out a safety alert around the ventilator and has then subsequently ended up in the Administrative Appeals Tribunal as the manufacturer has appealed the TGA's decision.
So the TGA tried to do the right thing, but the manufacturer exerted their rights in the Administrative Appeals Tribunal.
So the regulation allows the ensures due diligence from the TGA, and manufacturer took the TGA to the Administrative Appeals Tribunal, yes.
So the ventilator is still being used around Australia?
The manufacturer has apparently released updated software that overcomes that problem, so the ventilator is being used around Australia.
And have we tested that software?
The TGA is testing that software.
Right. I mean, you're an intensive care physician, that's your day job.
Yep.
That must have been scared the heck out of you.
So I think while the systems in intensive care are such that this child came to no harm, there are risks when you have staff that aren't used to a particular environment and a ventilator that doesn't respond to commands.
And the family was sitting there while all this was happening?
The family clearly were very distressed to hear a ventilator that was alarming, where the alarm couldn't be turned off, and a flurry of activities swapping the child off that ventilator onto another ventilator.
Now, the Commission on Safety and Quality in Healthcare, I mean, your job is to improve safety and quality in the Australian healthcare system. But you don't have any official role over devices, do you?
So we have no regulatory mandate, no. We do have, set the National Health Service standards, and those standards talk about hospitals having technology assessment processes to make sure that the technology is appropriate and is tested for that environment. And those standards are tested against via accreditation. So we have some indirect levers to try and improve.
Don't you need some
devices.
Direct levers? I mean, the current system's not working. Don't you need to take it over?
I don't think that's within our remit.
Well, it could be if there's a royal commission into devices. I mean, I'll come back to this in a moment. I mean, you talked about doctors being squeaky clean, but I'll let you off the hook for a moment, Rob. I mean,
thank you.
I'll come to Jim Cameron, who was the president of the Australian Cardiac Society of Australia and New Zealand, and got the Cardiac Outcomes Registry going. I mean, I think the first story I did on devices was in 2004, Jim, over a heart valve story. And then they were talking about getting a cardiac devices registry going. 14 years later, I mean, I understand that you got a commission by the government to actually set one up, but it's still not happened.
Yeah, thanks, Norman. Thanks, and hi, Rob and John. We set up this ACOR through the Cardiac Society in 2012, and we were setting out to set up a national cardiac procedures and devices registry. 2014, the federal government wanted to set up a devices registry, and ACOR won the tender for that. So we set off to do that in 2014 with intentions.
So we should just explain here, the idea, and we'll come to John McNeill in a moment, the idea in a registry is, and we've got a very successful one in Australia, the National Joint Replacement Registry, organised by orthopaedic surgeons, where most of them take part and they register the joint that is put into a patient and monitor that in case there's a problem with it. And we were one of the first countries in the world to alert the world of the metal-on-metal hip, which was causing all sorts of problems. And the idea was to do it for high-risk cardiac devices like stents, leads on pacemakers, and so on.
That's correct. So it was really meant to follow the lead of the joint replacement registry, which I think was started in the early 1990s, so has got lots of points on the board. So the cardiac devices registry, we won the tender 2014. So we set out to do that and ran into a large number of obstructions and roadblocks along the way.
Such as?
So several things. It turned out there were a lot of there were several state-based registries setting up as well in Australia. One Victoria, South Australia, and Queensland. They were already collecting clinical data, and they had a those registries had a strong relationship with their clinicians, and they actually didn't agree with submitting data to a national registry. And so that was one problem we ran into in several of the states. We also ran into a number of other problems.
So just before you go into the other ones, I mean, that what you've just said is totally gobsmacking. Every single health department in Australia would say they exist and put the patient at the centre. How could they possibly say that it was they didn't like the idea of giving it to a national registry?
Well, I think they...
How do they sleep straight in bed at night?
Well, let me sort of qualify that. I think those particular states wanted to do that themselves, and they wanted to run themselves. But at that time, and I'm not sure if they're still not doing that, but none of those groups were collecting device data. They were collecting clinical data. So what the proposal was that they start collecting device data and that they submit that directly to some other group themselves. So we also ran into a whole lot of other problems as well. I think there's a lot of legalistic, we ran into a lot of legalistic roadblocks at lots of hospitals in relation to privacy laws. And there was really quite
but that,
a lot
that's
of...
But that's just a cover. There's no real privacy issue here.
It can be. Well, I agree with you to some extent, but I think that a lot of hospitals weren't really sure how to work this with a national registry. And I think even though the joint replacement registry existed, and that's quite a number of them were already doing that. The privacy laws have changed a lot since the joint replacement registry was set up. I mean, to be quite honest, the joint replacement registry may not be viable either at this point in time, given some of those laws and some of that resistance we met.
So you and the government gave up on a cardiac devices registry, and you're doing your own thing with this new technology. We'll might come back to that in a minute. The transcatheter aortic valve implantation.
Well, I think the other problem we ran into, Norman, was that we. And I think it's germane to your discussion today. By the sound of it, is that the we actually felt that just collecting device data was not enough. We felt very strongly after starting the devices registry that we should be collecting good quality clinical data as well, so that the devices were not the information about the devices was not just being collected in a vacuum, so to speak, so that we had clinical data so that we could actually do things like risk model adverse outcomes. You can't really do that with collecting a device. Yeah, if you're just doing a pure device registry. Yeah, you need the clinical context as well.
John McNeil, give me a sense of the registries you're running that are relevant to this story.
We run 30 separate registries at Monash, Norman. They're basically divided into what we call clinical quality registries, drug and device registries, and rare disease registries. And it's the drug and device registries which I think are most relevant to this discussion because they monitor the safety of devices.
So you've got one in breast implants.
Yes, we have one in breast implants. We also run one on bariatric surgical devices. It actually started off as a registry focusing largely on the bands which have been used in bariatric surgery, but it's subsequently, as the bands have fallen out of favour, it's just monitors bariatric surgery as a whole.
What's your comment on the privacy issue raised by Jim Cameron? Is that a real issue?
Look, we haven't found that a big issue. We operate under what we call opt-out consent, which means that we pass some information to people who've, for example, have had a breast implant, explaining to them the importance of this information and why the details of their implant are really important for them.
So what sort of compliance do you get from doctors here? Because it's all voluntary. We're not mandating the doctors report.
Oh, no, of course. But we get pretty good compliance.
And have you found any defective devices as a result? Have you uncovered important information for patients?
With the breast implants, so we're focusing very much on what you said, the so-called ALCL, the implant-associated lymphomas, and registries are the only way we're ever going to get a handle on that.
What about other, I mean, the whole range of devices, John McNeil? Is it possible, as was suggested in the thing, to actually have a much wider range of devices automatically registered with mandated reporting by doctors? Because 2% is pathetic.
We've been advocating for this for quite a long time. With modern IT systems, I mean, all we really need to do is to collect some basic medical information and device information when high-risk devices are implanted, and then develop a system for surveillance down the track. And look, we know that this is a difficult thing to do, but look, we've got examples with the breast implant registry and others. We're studying the difficulties, and I think we're overcoming them one by one, and it'll certainly be very feasible within the next few years.
If there's government will. Jim Cameron, should you mandate that doctors do report, that it's part of their registration requirement?
I think that, with our experience, Norman, I think it's the only way forward. And I think it can be done in a way that's not punitive or Big Brother approach. I think we've come to the view that, particularly with our recent experience with the registry we're doing now, that probably the way the mandate should be linked to accreditation processes. For example, I think APRA, who are the doctors' certification group, are looking at this now. They're looking at doctors reporting registry data as part of their CPD requirements and really making that a mandated approach.
And just finally, I'm going to have to interrupt you there because we're almost out of time. Rob Herkus, very quickly, how do we make doctors squeaky clean in terms of their conflict of interest on these panels that are deciding the future of these devices?
So I think the first thing is most doctors don't understand that they're conflicted, and so they need some education about that. And then they need to declare their conflicts of interest. And, you know, one of the interesting things in our system is we encourage doctors to innovate and encourage hospitals to patent their innovations. But what needs to happen on top of that is those doctors need to understand that that then conflicts them about that device. And that has to be declared to patients, to the community when they're giving evidence in the Senate and so on.
And our panel there was John McNeil, who's head of the Department of Epidemiology and Preventive Medicine at Monash University, Rob Herkus, who's Chief Medical Officer at the Australian Commission on Safety and Quality in Healthcare, and Jim Cameron, who's Chair of the Australasian Cardiac Outcomes Registry. You've been listening to The Health Report. There's lots on the ABC website, in background briefings, 7:30, and other places too on this important issue. I'm Norman Swan. See you next week.